Welcome to the 27th Macro and Volatility Podcast. There was so much excitement in January, we figured that we'd wait until Tuesday, February 3rd, 2026 to record. My name is Eric Bender. I am joined by our two experts, Michael Purvis, CEO of Talbot Capital Advisors, a cross-asset macro research firm, and Josh Silva, CIO of Passaic Partners, a derivative specialist and a manager of institutional advisory assets. Before we dive into today's topics, we ask that if you like what you hear, please subscribe to the Macro and Volatility on your podcast platform of choice, Bloomberg and/or LinkedIn. And as always, Michael is available to discuss his institutional research offering, and Josh is available to discuss his derivative solutions for your portfolio. All right, let's get into it. Michael, it's been a crazy start to the year. It's a lot to unpack. Just in the last month, we've seen Japanese bond yields soar, gold and silver have broken all records on the upside, and then the downside with one of the most violent sell-offs on record. And of course, we now know who is going to be the new Fed chair, Kevin Warsh. How do you view these three things, and how do you want to kick off?
Well, Eric, thank you. Look, I think all of these topics that you just highlighted deserve a lot of attention, but let's sort of go through them. You know, first on gold and silver, look, I've been very constructive on gold and silver for some time. There's two big themes here. One is the sort of the dollar debasement trade. I don't really like that term, but there is some sort of allocation into a currency that's non-fiat, and that sort of underscores much of the gold rally. And then the other theme, and this is really more on the silver side, is this massive AI fixed asset boom, of which silver is playing a key role here. So silver being both monetary and industrial metals, has benefited. And both of these themes are massive themes for last year, but also this year and well into the future. All that said, look, you know, if you look at just, you know, when things start going parabolic, as they did for both gold and silver over the last few weeks, you have to look at technicals more than anything, because narratives sort of, to my mind, become secondary. And it's really about, like, how overextended are you there? So I've been sort of tactically hedging these things. I think the move down we saw last Friday after the Warsh announcement was unbelievable there. But I think that doesn't necessarily mean that the precious metals rally is over. I think there's more to come, but I think it's going to be very choppy waters for the near term there.
Yeah, I mean, what I saw, and I think it's a very overbought meme condition, like a meme stock condition in silver. There were a lot of similarities to what we saw in the meme stock craze and what we saw in silver in this last move. Vol was up big, as we saw tons of call buying in both silver and gold. Quite a bit of expansion and open interest on the call side. And then when the move happened on Friday, we saw a big contraction, not only in the asset, but in the vol. The vol silver collapsed as people unwound a lot of their call positions. And so you're kind of seeing the similar pattern that we saw with meme stocks, we saw in silver. And in fact, Michael, and you and I have been talking about this a lot, you've mentioned that the open interest in silver hasn't really changed that much during this whole up and down move.
Well, it's been remarkably low, both on the long and the short side. It had been coming lower there, which is unusual and not necessarily something you want to see if you're long the commodity. You want to see open interest expand. But
yeah, I mean, it seems like it was, again, a little bit of a meme-driven volatility-led rally. And there's also another, you know, fundamental reasons why, you know, I think this de-dollarization talk is there's a certain amount of real to it, as you know, the U.S. Policy moves a little bit more away from the geopolitical policy that we've had in the past, and so it adds what I would call geopolitical risk or even war risk, which is something we haven't talked about since the fall of the Berlin Wall. And honestly, the fact that Bitcoin is falling during this, if you think about the fundamental reasons of why people bought Bitcoin, was this de-dollarization or this move away from currencies. Going forward, as you are, Michael, I think it's an easy trade is over. I'm constructive on gold and silver, but it has more to do with my view on currencies and geopolitical risk than the de-dollarization.
Yeah, Josh, just to add on a couple of quick points there. You know, gold vol, to your point, did spike over the last couple of weeks to levels that were actually higher than the crazy 2011 rally there. But what's also interesting is that, this gold rally is not just the last 6 months thing. It's been building over the last few years. And most of that rally from 2000 to 3000 to 4000, it was accompanied by very low gold volatility, unusually low. And I think that gets back to the fact that central banks have been the sort of the core pillar of much of that rally, and they were sort of buying dips and not selling rips, which is inherently gold vol suppressive there. Then it became much more of a traders Wall Street rally over the last 6 months, and that was the change.
I apologize. Yeah, and I would go throw in that this January December rally is more of the meme. The stuff before was real, and I'm glad that you pointed that out.
But and the contrast with the Bitcoins is a good one. I mean, central banks don't buy Bitcoin; they do buy gold, and they don't generally buy silver either, for that matter. But you do have a, you had a very high gold silver ratio that's now down, got down to 48, 49 at the peak last week, and it's sort of backed up to the mid 50s there. But it did get down to 35 in 2011 and got down to 17 in 1980. So arguably, if the gold rally holds together, you could start seeing silver keep pushing into fresh highs. But let's see.
Great. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate that. I mean, you heard it here first that Bitcoin is failing as an asset class. I kind of like that concept. Anyway, let's pivot to Japanese bond yields. So, what's going on there, Josh? What do you think?
I think all this is coming back to this currency argument, which continues to be a sort of a real assets positive. And what we're seeing across the globe is, a question on the size of the debt, which, I mean, the debt markets in January are some of the biggest issuance we've seen. And people are starting to question the size of it and the size of the debt globally, not just on the US. And I think when people start, looking at the long end of the market, which is, whether it's, we're focusing on Japan here, they're going to start putting more risk into it. In other words, pricing more risk or duration is going to start having a more risky tone to it. So therefore, those bonds are going to trade more expensively or at a wider price. What I mean by that is sort of the 2, 30-year spread, 2, 10-year spread. We're going to see that continue to steepen because I think there's going to be a price to long duration risk going forward. And so I think that's something that people have to start coming to terms with, that it's the long bond is going to be a more risky asset to own than they've grown accustomed to over the last 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, there's really a key structural shift here. We stare at U.S. Treasury curves and interest rates all day long, and debate whether the 10-year or the 30-year should be higher or lower here. But there is a tidal shift that's going on in foreign bond yields. The back end of the Japanese curve is making fresh highs, and just today, Eric, Bund yields were making fresh 13-year highs here too. I think there's a broader picture here that this whole retreat from extraordinarily dovish policies that we had from the BOJ and the ECB for so many years. Look, it was only 3.5 years ago when that when the 30-year Bund yield was actually negative, right? I mean, and now we're up to through 3.5%, which is really not that far from our 30-year yield when you think about it. Here. So that structural shift here is happening. And I think the question, look, we had a glimmer 2 weeks ago when we had that Japanese JGB earthquake happen, when their yields just jumped up like gold or silver might have a couple of weeks ago. And it was very sort of disturbing, but and it sort of moved our rates market here for like a day, and then it kind of all fell apart. And I think that's one of these things where these shifts in interest rate developments or and frameworks are sort of happening, but they're not vol events. They're very gradual things that sort of, to Josh's point, help reinforce a steeper curve, probably put a floor in the absolute level of interest rates, and sort of speak to the fact that not only is the US economy in good shape and also with persistent inflation, but that's also true in Europe and other developed economies like Japan.
And there's one last thing I want to add, and this is from the trading side more than the fundamental and macro side that Michael focuses on, is we saw a lot of assets whipping around last month. Like you saw, energy stocks up 10%, the Qs flat, There was a lot of extreme vol underneath the sheets in equity markets with an S&P up 1%. And I think the amount of people trading has increased a lot recently, and specifically more momentum trading has increased a lot recently. And you could say AI-driven trading for that matter. Who AI trading doesn't care about fundamentals. It cares about price and price movements and what that means for going forward. And I think it's added when these moves occur, the tails are a little bit bigger than they have been in the past, where so you could describe as a normal distribution, the body is more consistent longer, but when the tail happens, it's a little bit more violent, like what we saw in silver. And part of the reason is the inflation that we've saw has stabilized. Now, there's questions about whether that's going to change over the next year. And people are starting to question where that's going, which is part of the reason for the de-dollarization trade of the gold and silver trade. So we'll see with where we go from here. The debt issue is stabilizing at the moment as well. So the amount is starting to stabilize. And therefore, the volatility of fixed income assets, because there's a cleaner, clearer picture of inflation and issuance, is stable. So therefore, we're seeing this move index just not to pun, not move. And so I think, I think what's going to be interesting going forward for the move is where this new Fed is going to take us, because we really don't know. And there's a lot of different opinions upon it.
Yeah, so I think, look, if you to me, Fed movement is really such an important driver of where things like the MOVE Index go here. And the reality is that the range of potential outcomes, what we're looking at in terms of Fed policy shifts, are really pretty narrow here. I've called this a tweaking cycle for some time, and I think we're going to probably stay in it. Now, that also gets into the wars discussion as well. And I think there's a lot of discussions about a lot of discussion about whether wars is going to increase rate volatility or decrease rate volatility. I think part of that answer comes down to, well, certainly right now we just don't know, because we don't know how Warsh is going to, what he's really going to push for. It's a little, there's all sorts of contradictions and complexities, because he's, has been, certainly a lot more hawkish than most. Certainly on paper, he looks very hawkish, but of course, Trump has nominated him, and Trump has been very clear he wants lower interest rates there. So how that all pans out, and how, he's talked a lot about having a smaller Fed in terms of its role in the economy, and a smaller Fed balance sheet. But how do you, if he really cuts down the balance sheet, does that reduce liquidity and therefore exacerbate rate volatility? But yet, Eric, on the other hand, for him to really drive key changes in policy, he's going to have to persuade his colleagues on the FOMC. And I think one of the themes that I see really developing here is that we have to be prepared for record level of dissension within the FOMC. Let's just assume that happens, right? Well, what does that mean? I actually think that probably ends up suppressing rate volatility. It doesn't feel like it does. It certainly makes for volatile headlines in the newspapers. But I think the end result might be is that if you get a much more homogenized outcome there, then the Fed has a higher probability of staying in the sort of narrow range of policy rates.
Yeah, I think the pick proved to be less controversial than the markets were expecting, and therefore they reacted accordingly. See silver, gold, and the dollar move on Friday. I think there was a fear that the Fed would take an extreme version of itself, and I think what the market got was something that was calming. So the silver, gold trade sort of fell apart, and the dollar recovered. I really think this pick could also redefine what the Fed is. And specifically, its relationship to the Treasury. I think that's an important thing that we need to watch and pay attention to, based on things that Bessent has said in terms of the Fed and the Treasury's relationship. I'm curious to see what they do with bank regulation and bank balance sheets going forward, based upon what they're looking at. So those are the things I'm looking at in terms of the Fed, in terms of the relationship to the Treasury and in terms of their relationships with banks. Again, all this is uncertain. And so it'll be interesting, which kind of brings us back to what we love to talk about, which is all the favorite VIX. And I think the volatility risk premium, is going to remain high, and therefore what I'm saying is the risk is going to carry higher. We're going to have a higher VIX for longer, sort of what we've been seeing and Michael and I have been talking about for the last 3 to 6 months. I think it's going to continue. Again, the Fed is very important here and how that plays out. New Fed chairmen are usually very bullish for the VIX at certain points because people are uncertain about uncertainty, and therefore the VIX a little bit higher because of what the Fed has done. Anytime we've seen a new Fed, we sort of see a higher VIX for the short term. I also think the last thing I want to talk about the VIX is we've had incredibly low correlation. And does this new Fed chairman change that? Because that will really cause the VIX to move higher. This low correlation that we've seen has really dampened the VIX. And so are we going to get something that pushes the market to a higher correlation? And I think that's something to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think on correlation, I think we need a real economic downturn for us to start seeing higher correlations and higher VIX accordingly. Right now, look, we've got late cycle stimulus from the big beautiful bill. We've got a Fed that to some degree is going to be more dovish. And even if you take an outlier, oh, that we get a hike later in, second half of this year because inflation's too high. Even if you take that scenario, that's just not a big move, right? We are in a pretty accommodative stance. We've done 175 basis points of cuts over the last 18 months on top of 4 point whatever percent, 3%, 5%, 4% unemployment and a GDP that's, has five handles on depending on the day. So it is truly remarkable there. So until you start seeing that sort of risk, that this economic condition really weaken, I think the market stays bid. It's just what part of the market you're going to be in. And if you have a high rotation or an unrotation dynamic, that just crushes correlations.
Yeah, it's I totally agree with you. It's what's gonna cause that to break. And I honestly I don't know. But there are some interesting things out there that to keep an eye on as the year goes on. That's all I got for today. Thank you, Michael and Eric. Anything else, Eric, you want to throw in there?
Well, I mean, usually I ask you guys for the last word. I think Warsh is the last word up from probably both of you. What's going to happen there? My question is, if he does stand his ground, how long does he last?
Yeah, I know. You have to wonder what that dialogue would be over breakfast at the White House if he's not able to persuade his colleagues to do a lot of cuts when if he's argued for that, or for that matter, if he just doesn't push for cuts at all. That would be an interesting a conversation to be a fly on the wall for. But I think just my last comment here would be, and Josh and I've talked about this in the past, but I think it merits repeating, which is. In the late 90s, you had a pretty low treasury vol condition, you had a robust equity market, and you had a VIX that never went below 20, despite those strong rallies here. And I think it's a very robust market with a lot of upside volatility, and that helps keep this volatility risk premium reinforced. It keeps the VIX coming down to 11 or 12. And it's what happens in a high rotation market.
I will use your 90s theme to go with my final thing is I think the VIX will stay a little bit robust. And I think I starting to question the US growth versus value trade continuing to be as strong as it is. I could see us having a little bit of tech give back and value kind of coming up this year, sort of what happened at the end of 2000, sort of 2022 type environment. I don't know if we'll get a down move because I think a lot of those stocks will be robust, but I think you're going to see a little bit of a rotation continue that we've seen already continue.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Josh. You can find them on Bloomberg, LinkedIn, and their respective websites at www.tabakencapital.com and PassaicPartners.com. Thank you for joining us today, and remember, we will help you keep an eye on what matters in the markets.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not investment advice. The information, opinions, and views expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended as investment advice. The opinions expressed may not align with Passaic Partners' views or its client strategies. Market forecasts are speculative and should not be the sole basis for investment decisions. Consult your financial and tax advisors before making any investments.